Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Wednesday, everybody. It is time for another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 191. We are getting closer and closer to that magic number 200, and that's going to be a big celebration that night. We're going to invite everybody out to Hawaii, and no, I'm just kidding. So I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen Gies. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing fine. Everything cool in Michigan?
Yeah, cool. Cool as in cold. It's been cold. It's been, we had a couple of inches of snow here a few days ago. Then it's, the snow melted and it rained pretty much all day yesterday. And today it was nice and sunny, but it was still kind of cold. We're looking at a warm-up, though, coming up here in the next few days. So spring is here. It's just Michigan. That's how it is.
Speaking of cold, it's cold in space, which is where the Star Child stories take place. We've been republishing Star Child books by Robert G. Willis-Croft, sci-fi master authors, Robert G. Willis-Croft. He had a Star Child trilogy series, and we're republishing it as a four-book Star Child saga. The first one, Slingshot, is already out this past week. We put out the second one, the Daedalus Files, so it's in full distribution now and can be found everywhere. And today we've published the third book, the Star Child Compact. We've still got the fourth book to go sometime in the next couple of weeks. But get out there and check out that Star Child saga series by Robert G. Willis-Croft.
Yeah, incredible. And speaking of space, A Beggar's Bargain is not set in space. It's set in Missouri. And the buzz has been strong. Jan Sykes, her new novel, the reviews are in, and they are all positive. They are all five-star reviews, and she's got herself a winner here. So A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes. Get out there. It's available now. And listeners, if you would like to call in tonight, if you have a comment or a question for tonight's guest, or you just have something to add to the conversation, you can call in or you can use X, formerly known as Twitter. And here's how you can do all that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
See there.
All right. Every now and then we make a list of all the books that we should be working on just to see, you know, what we're lagging. And we came up with about 15 books that are in our pipeline right now. One we've been working on last day or two especially is Through the Lens by world-renowned wildlife photographer Angie Birmingham. And it starts from the basics and gets a little bit complicated, as much as you can handle, basically teaching how to do stunning wildlife photography, how to make your backgrounds blur, how to make the pictures glow, how to adjust your images, and how to get that really cool shot. Right now, she's on her way to Costa Rica. She just left a couple of hours ago, where she's going to be getting some more photos for the last two chapters in the book. She's going to be getting some toucan antics down there in Costa Rica. So that'll be Through the Lens by Angie Birmingham, coming out in the next couple of weeks.
See there how dedicated Angie Birmingham is? She thought, well, you know, I've got two more chapters to do. What will I do? I know. I'll fly down to Costa Rica and capture some Toucan Sam pictures. So there you go. Another one we've got coming down the pipeline here is Journey to the Water, or Nowhere to Go. Not sure which title Nell Cooper has settled on, but it's a new novel from Nell Cooper. She has the manuscript right now. I did the editing and got a chance to read it, and it's a phenomenal novel. There's some sadness there, and ultimately it ends on a happy note, which is one of these uplifting kind of things. But It's a strong story, and it's set here in Michigan, which is fantastic. So A Journey to the Water or Nowhere to Go by Nell Cooper. Keep your eyes and ears open for that arrival and all of these books that we've got in the pipeline that are coming soon, and all of the people who are going to be on this program, the Voice of Indie podcast. We showcase this every Wednesday morning in our newsletter. And it's a newsletter that's not going to take you, 2 hours to read. It's a 20-minute read, and you'll be up to date on everything Fresh Ink Group and everything Voice of Indie and everything Indie Publishing. And if you're not subscribed to that newsletter, I got to wonder why. What's wrong with you? Did your mama drop you on your head when you were a baby? I don't know. But here's how you can get that taken care of.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right, let's take a look at what's happening in the Fresh Ink Group print bestsellers list. This week, starting at number 25, the first book of Robert G. Willis Croft's Ork Chronicles series. We just recently published 3 and 4, Ran and Keyed. But this one's the first book, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Ork Chronicle by Robert G. Willis Croft. Right above that, tied for the same position, Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship by off-the-hook sports writer Dave Hooker.
Above you wanted that, to Andrew say Hork.
I wanted to. Above that, Andrew McGregor. How to Paint an American. It's a novel. What would you say about this one, Beam?
I would say it's worth your time to purchase this novel and read it. It is a very well-written and strong story of a young man coming from Eastern Europe, and he comes to the United States of America because he wants to find out what it means to be an American, and he falls in with some crappy people that show him the wrong ideas of being American. He stumbles into some mediocre guys that show him the mediocre way of being an American, and ultimately he stumbles in with some good people who show him the good side of being an American, and he paints an American.
There you go. Now, above those, we've got two of the How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business books. Lately, it's been the Florida edition that keeps creeping up the list the highest. Florida's not even on the list today. These two are How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Tennessee, and right above that, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia. Tennessee wants the hardcover edition that's selling so well, too.
Wow.
And here's a book that tends to be right next to the food truck books, How to Teach Driving, Instructor's Edition by Kenneth Lindquist. We've had a lot of self-help, prescriptive self-help selling well lately. Here's Vladimir Kolixny's Naked and Transparent, 6 Vital Tools for Knowing Yourself and Attracting Healthy Relationships. Now, above that, David Carroll, what's his thick book, Beam?
The thick book, is this Chattanooga?
Yeah.
Hello, Chattanooga. That's an excellent book. It's kind of a historical look at everybody famous who has gone through Chattanooga and played there in their concert halls or sporting events, and just really cool.
Yeah. Now, David Carroll's he's the Chattanooga NBC Evening News anchor. 3 slots above that, he's also got his book, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders. That book's a lot of fun. Now, the two in between it, My 3 Wishes, Memoir of a Hawaiian Dancer Whose Family Troupe Traveled the World, and that's by Kanoi K. And then, above that, Gwen M. Plano, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Boy, that's becoming a very popular novel by Gwen.
Yeah,
and above that, we've still got another instructor's edition of How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel Lesson by Lesson by Kenneth Lindquist. This one's the hardcover edition. And then above that, J. Ash Looney jumps into the list with, and this is not a short title, people, Who Said That? The Stories Behind Familiar Expressions. For readers, writers, word lovers, and trivia buffs, Fresh Ink Group explains whence come those phrases that color everyday speech. And that's by J. Ash Looney. Now here we go. Dick Ferrer Jr., The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant. The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction. That was based up there in Fayetteville, Tennessee. Now, we've got a sassy book, Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson. It's the first of her 2-book sassy series. And then above that, Dr. Helen Burrell, paperback edition of American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. And that brings us to another Sassy Discovers the EME Church, the hardcover edition. Now, we're looking at the top seven here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And a couple of these books are in here twice, once for the paperback edition, once for the hardcover edition. That tells you both editions are selling so well they can make the top of the list. So let's look at the number seven slot, the hardcover edition, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks Keeping the Fleet Afloat. And that's by retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate, 60-chapter memoir. Very exciting, very fun, sometimes funny, sometimes poignant, but you'll definitely get your toes wet when you dip into Submariner. Above that, Mark Herndon was the supergroup Alabama drummer for almost three decades. He's written a memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, and that's the paperback edition. So that brings us to the top five. Dave Hooker, Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. That's the paperback edition. I thought college football season was over, but this book's still out there stirring up a lot of attention. Number four, Mark Marlowe, Operation Counterpunch. We published this book quite a while back, so it's fun to see it surging back into the top sellers again. That brings us to the top three. You know Jan Sykes is in there at number three with A Beggar's Bargain, and that's the first book in her Bargainers series. Now, top two. Number two, paperback edition of Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate. That brings us to number one. Number one this week is a hardcover, and it's Mark Herndon, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. We've got a real cool trailer for that, too. You should get over there to YouTube, the Fresh Ink Group channel, and check out our trailer playlist and watch the video for The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Congratulations, everybody. Good selling week.
Yeah, fantastic. For all the books that we publish, we've got videos, book trailers for them. All the commercials you hear on this program, we've got book trailers for those as well. So get over to the YouTube channel, that's Fresh Ink Group, Fresh Ink Group on YouTube, and check out all of our videos. And while you're over there, like those videos and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. That really helps us. We're trying to build something here. We're in our third season on this show. So we're going into 3 years of really trying to build this up. And we've come a long way since the beginning. Back when we had two coffee cans and a string, and there wasn't anybody listening except for this one squirrel named Rocky. But if you get over there, make sure you like and subscribe and help us move the needle a little bit on this volume knob. So that's about it. So speaking of this show, if you've missed an episode, I know a lot of people are working out there on Wednesday evening, or they just can't make it. We get our biggest audience is in our archive. The day after the show, later than that night after the show, I get to see all of these, where the big boost and the spike in listeners come from and where they're listening and all those cool little statistics. So if you've missed any of our shows, or you've got a favorite show you just want to go back and listen to again and again and again and again, we've got that archive, and here's how you can find that.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
A lonely man finds love again. After 47 years of a great relationship, courtship, and marriage, the author found himself alone. His wife had struggled with a rough fight with dementia. She took a sudden and unexpected turn for the worse, leaving him alone for the first time in his adult life. He was 64 at the time, but felt more like he was 40 physically and 95 emotionally. For over a year, he had tried to go forward with his life, but when he was alone at night, his heart's emptiness reminded him that he needed someone to fill the ache inside. Loneliness is a killer, and he was dying from grief. He was dying inside because he had never been alone in his life. He told himself that he would be all right, but he wasn't, and he was fading fast. Then he found Heather. They were two souls drifting in a sea of loneliness and grief that found one another amid a building storm. Is she the one that can pull him out of an escalating depression? We'll see. Finding Myself Again is a sequel to Verwaine Greeno's book, I Remember Judy. Readers are posting comments like this. Finding myself again is like receiving a sign so I can move forward with my life. Second chances are not to be missed. Keep searching and find yourself again. And I literally cried with joy for Verwaine and cried with new insight for my future and know that I can love again. Thank you for writing this book and sharing it with us. Finding Myself Again and I Remember Judy by Verwaine Greeno are available in paperback and audiobook from Amazon.com.
He knew from an early age there was something wrong with his mother. By the time he could allow the abused little boy in him to let it go, it was just in time to forgive her. Now he's working to forgive himself. I Hate My Mother is an all-too-true story. At 69, author Verwaine Greeno is attempting to justify many things that happened in his life while he can. Many people out there could admit to the same issue. Maybe it was your father, mother, or you change the title as you need. Originally a popular Vela read, this memoir of survival, I Hate My Mother by Verwaine Greeno, is now available worldwide in print and ebook editions.
All right. So those two ads are for books for tonight's guest. And let's introduce him. Born and raised in West Michigan, author Verwaine Greeno spent the last 7 years in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan after freezing his keister off. He and his wife moved to Florida in late 2021 to spend more time writing and less time shivering. Author of multiple stories, genres, and formats, including 31 Audible books and counting, Bert Greeno spends his free time working in his backyard, plotting on where his next story will go. And welcome to the show, Verwaine Greeno. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Verwaine.
Good evening, gentlemen.
So how about we, right off the bat, how about we touch a little bit on the two ads that we just played, the books for those ads, Finding Myself. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, the Finding Myself Again, you kind of laid out the story there. I was completely lost, and I want to call it divine intervention, that I found the next step in my life. I had met her 20 years before. We had worked together. But I right at that point in time, I was so lost. And the only thing I could do was I wrote a flurry of stories in between there. And I just published them. They weren't well edited at all, but I had to keep doing it. And it was kind of I call it divine intervention. I sent her a note, and then I didn't hear anything back from her for several weeks. And I thought, well, you know, there goes that. And then just when I needed it most, she responded. And from there, things just went gone nothing but up. I'm very happy with what's going on in my life now. I couldn't be happier. It was just blows my mind that I could have found two such wonderful women. And completely makes my life worth living.
Well, that's very cool. Now, speaking of wonderful women, you hate your mother. I Hate My Mother is the name of the book that we just heard the commercial for. What's that about?
Well, that is a completely true story about my childhood in the first 25 years of my life. I was the oldest of six kids, and my mother took her craziness out on me. She had a severe skull fracture and injury back in 10 years before she got married. She got ran over by a John Deere tractor. And it was a doctor who had just come back from World War II that saved her life. But she just would have violent, raging fits now and then. And she would yell and scream and beat all of us. But I was always her number one target as the oldest. And she always told me, she says, "You're worthless, you're stupid, you're no good, you'll never be anything." Well, I kind of used that to, I developed this kind of a lifetime motto, is rise above. I left home when I was 15. I'm 70, rapidly pushing 71. But I still bear the scars that she inflicted on me when I was 8 to 12. My wife didn't initially believe that, but she began to look a little bit closer, and she could easily still see the scars of all those beatings. She used to hit me with, I don't know if you grew up on the farm, they had these rubberized straps that they would put around cows to hold the milking machine in place, and she would hit me with those things. And you can still find old rivet holes and scars on my back. But after I was 25, I didn't see her for decades. And then she passed in 2015, but I saw her, accidentally ran into them in a restaurant. The waitress asked if I would mind if I had a couple of lady friends sit down. It was my two aunts and my mother. She didn't recognize me at all. And I tried to talk to her, and she didn't recognize me. Dementia had swallowed her up. And I forgave her. I told her that. I don't know if she understood me at all. I don't think so. But I saw a spark in her eye that maybe she did. But I had long thought about writing a story about my childhood like that, but I didn't. And finally, I knew I had to get rid of the hate in my heart, so I just began to write. And that story is roughly 40,000 words long, and I wrote that in 6 days.
Wow.
Because I just had to, it just came to me, it just rolled off the keyboard. And when I got done, you know, there was a lot of really times where I was, I don't want to say sobbing, but yeah, I was really letting everything go. And when I put those last two words, the end, to the end of that story, I felt much better. And it's the title can throw you, but it explained everything that happened in my life in between there that was done by her. And in the end, like I said, I forgave her, and then I had to figure out how I was going to explain to the rest of the world, you know, what I had done and how sorry I was for some of the things I said and did.
So it has an uplifting ending, would you say, or is it all dark?
Yes, sir. No, it starts out with, you know, where I forgive her in the initial chapter, but then I go back and tell you why all this happened. But yes, I do come. I went to her funeral, and I saw the whole crowd shudder when I walked in, because everybody thought I was going to come there and say a whole bunch of bad things. I stood up, they asked for people to come up and say something, and I heard the great collective as I walked in. And but I didn't do any of that. I said, most of you knew my mother and I had a very bad relationship for the longest time. And then I explained the meeting in the restaurant.
And, do you think that the head injury was the cause of all of that? And maybe she would have been a different person?
Spending 39 years in the medical field, and I've got a BS in psychology, abnormal psych. I firmly believe that was exactly what caused that. Was she fell off the tractor, and by the time my grandfather got the thing stopped, they had just gone. It was the end of World War II, 1946. This happened. I was born in 53. She pitched forward, and they had just put the rubber tires back on the tractor 2 days before that. If it had been the old, you know, metal tires or rims they were using during World War II, she'd have been dead. But it put a whole mess of pressure from her pelvic and abdominal injury. It blew blood out of her nose and ears. The pressure was so high. And she was never right after that. And I often ask my father, I said, Dad, I understand it's none of my business, but she's clearly crazy. What did you see in her? And he says, she wasn't this bad before all this happened. And he says, she just gradually got worse and worse and worse. And then dementia ate her up. And that's a hard road to go.
Yeah.
My sister gets nothing but roses for me. She took care of her that last year, and I don't know how she did it. I really, really, really don't. But she did a wonderful job taking care of her, and, you know, until the end. And I have thanked her redundantly for that. So,
yeah, all right.
That was a hard story for me to write.
All right, I'm gonna take a couple of things here on Twitter before these get to be old and don't make any sense. The first, they're both from Robert G. Williscroft. First one, he's saying 31 books. How about that? So you got a fan there. Says, if Jerry Pate is listening, congrats on being in the top five for both hard and soft covers of Submariner. So,
yeah, that's cool. Rare.
Yeah, that's but I mean, that's just a testimony to that book. And that book's got some legs. It's been running for a while.
Sea legs.
Congrats to Jerry Pate and to Robert G. Williscroft, who helped out with that book. So cool deal. We are talking with Verwin Greenhoe, a longtime friend of the show and all-around good guy. And if you want to talk to him, if you have a question for him or you just want to stop in and say hello, the number is 516-453-9902. That's 516-453-9902. And we will be right back after this.
In the Pruitt-Igo slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him.
Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now, Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms. A shocking proposal that changes everything. Desperate to honor his father's dying wish, Lakin Martin vows to do whatever it takes to save the family farm. Once the Army discharges him following World War II, Lakin returns to Missouri to find his legacy in shambles and in jeopardy. A foreclosure notice from the bank doubles the threat. He appeals to the local banker for more time, a chance to rebuild, plant, and harvest crops, and time to heal far away from the noise of bombs and gunfire. But the banker firmly denies his request. Now what? Then the banker makes an alternative proposition. Marry his unwanted daughter, Sarah Beth, in exchange for a 2-year extension. Out of options, money, and time, Lakin agrees to the bargain. Now he has 2 years to make a living off the land while he shares his life with a stranger. Read A Beggar's Bargain, Book 1 in the Bargainer series by best-selling author Jan Sykes. Available worldwide from multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes.
All right, and there are book trailers up on our YouTube channel for both of those books that we just played, so get over there, like, and subscribe, or else we will send Guido to your house. You don't want Guido. So, no. Irwin, you got involved with the whole Vela program over on Amazon. You know, I'm guessing you were there, like, on the ground floor when they first kicked that off, because I know you've been involved in that. There's some changes coming up to Vela. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. When I'd started out in Vela for the first couple months, I was just posting stuff to it, and I didn't get anything. And one day I got notified that I just got $137 from Vela. Whoa. So I began to really work it. And I've got checks as high as $735 in a month.
Wow.
Well, what is it? What is it that you were working? What is Vela?
Well,
yeah,
Vela is a new platform Amazon's got out. It's primarily aimed at, you know, the cell phone has become everybody's new world. You see people going down the road 85 mile an hour looking at their cell phone. So they figured we'll make a platform especially for a cell phone. Now you can read this on a regular Kindle. You can read it in a computer. Doesn't matter. But it was aimed for people who use cell phones a lot. You can read a whole story on there. And it's done episode by episode. It's kind of like I call it daytime TV, the old soap business where the story just continues every day. And when I'm at my best, I can average 4,500 to 5,000 words a day. And I figured, well, I'll just keep doing this. And it worked for me. And it worked for a long time because for over a year, I was averaging anywhere from $575 to $750 a month just doing everything on Vela. The two stories that we just talked about, especially I Hate My Mother, that got me a lot of follows, a lot of hits. So people were really wrapped up in that story, and I got a lot of frustration and heartache out of my system, plus I put a lot of cash in my pocket, you know, for my time. So it was worth it. Then all this business, they had this thing where they were they were paying you one, I mean, you were basically getting a credit for every 100 words that you put up. So if you put out a minimum you can put up is 600. So if you posted a 613-word episode, you're going to get 6 credits. Well, I was doing that, doing really well with it. But then all of a sudden they were giving away the first 3 episodes, and I understand that. You know, it was kind of, you know, here's the hook. Do you like this? You know, do you like this story? Are you willing to go to that 4th episode and shell out a few bucks to read chapter 4? And I began to write to that format. Well, now your first 10 episodes are free, and with a minimum of 600 words, and nobody writes just exactly 600 words. So I'm going to say, let's say 8,000 words. Your first 8,000 words are free. 800 words per episode, and then, but instead of getting paid per hundred, you just get a flat 10 credits towards payment. And I belong to the Kindle Vella author support group on Facebook. And this is no, my wife would hit me, but she's in another room. It's inhabited about 99% female authors. And they just absolutely, positively blew a cork when the morning that came out, because I logged into Facebook and I'm going, bam, all this stuff from the support group. Well, you know, everybody was going to pack their bags, run away from the house or away from home. And initially, that was my first thought, too. Well, the heck with this racket. I'm out of here. But then I began to think about it, and I looked at it and looked at it and looked at it. Yes, you're giving away roughly 15,000 words. But after that, you're getting 10 credits. And I plotted it all out. I just finished Love to the Ages, which is a 21,500 short romance story, which is doing very well, did very well. And it was only 18 episodes long, meaning that I would, under the old way, I would get 80 points towards payment, or, you know, but I was getting, now I'm getting 10. That was, by the time I got all done, I would only have about 17,000 after you got the free ones out of the way. And I would have got like 18 credits or something like that. I had it all figured out. But now, that same one, I would be giving away roughly a little over half of the story. But after that, I was getting 10 credits per episode. Didn't matter if it was only 657 words long or if it was 5,000 words long. I got 10 credits. By the time I figured it all out, I was making twice as much doing it the new way. And I just kept looking at it, and I'm going, okay, this is the way I need to do this. So what I finally have discovered is if you're going to write short stories, and like I'm writing a romance story. I call it midlife romance stories. And I leave the first one in, finish it, and then move to the next one. But just keep adding it so that my intro to the story is getting me paid. Previous to that, I was not getting paid for the first 3, including, you know, I always go through and tell you what this story is going to be about. And kind of like Alfred Hitchcock used to do. And but before, that was a giveaway. Well, now I'm getting paid for that. And I haven't begun to post that next story, but I've already got the next short story, romance story. I'm 8,000-9,000 words into it. But once I begin to post that, it will begin to make me immediately 10 credits for every episode. And
So you think you're getting approximately double then what you used to get under the new system. Do you think that'd be true for everybody once they get in there and try it? Or do you think it's going to be uneven results? Some people would be worse off.
It depends on if you're a steady writer. If you're steady and you're there all the time and you're posting, it's like Stephen King is notorious for huge, long chapters. But then occasionally he'll have that short chapter. And I think everybody writes that way. You're going to get paid, you know, by the episode, and it's working for me. And I think that if they get in there and start to make series like The Chair, to use that series or the submarine, you know, any of those series stories that you folks publish, you get in there and you put that in. And you run it all the way through that episode. I mean, first part one, part two, part three, part four. By the time you get all done, you didn't get paid for the first 10, but you got paid for every episode after that, including the intro to the intro, you know, and the special thanks to part. And you're getting paid for all that, and then you set up the next story, and then you just continue on. And you're getting, for that second story, you're getting paid for every bloody word that is in it, every episode. So if you're going to do a series, like, you know, that particular series with The Chair, you'd get paid, you'd have to give away, let's say, roughly 1,000 per episode. First 10, that's 10,000 words. Those are, you know, they're done. But you would have given away, if you had four, the other way is you had four versions of that, if I remember right, correct?
The Chair, we're getting ready to do the fifth version. And the thing with The Chair is each volume has 6 million words in it.
Okay, yes.
But just kidding.
You would have given away five volumes times five times. Yeah, you'd have been given away three the first time, but with five volumes, you'd have been given away 15 versus 10 for the whole thing if you'd have done it in one long series. And then when you get done, you just mark it complete. The series is complete, and then 30 days later, you can do with it as you please. After you mark it completed, you can turn it into an ebook. It can go every place, any place that you normally would go with it. So if you had all five of those there and done while you folks were editing them, getting them ready to go, he could mark them as complete in months, 6 weeks, whatever it takes for you to get them in publication formatting and ready to go. The thing would get through its 30 days suspension where you couldn't do anything with it, and you'd be ready to just go out to the world like you normally do.
So, well,
I've looked at it from every which way but loose, and I think that as I put in there, they've accidentally made this better. I don't have an awful lot of faith in what I call the Big A. And
that is an Amazon accident.
Yeah.
I thought the Big A had killed the Vela platform, but instead they made it better.
Yeah, because if they can kill something, they'll do it.
So what is the Amazon AI editor, and how has that affected the Vela program?
Okay. I'm going to just spend a couple of seconds telling you how I edit myself. I get all done. First thing I do is send it off to, I've got a lady in Phoenix, Arizona, who goes through and she says, look, bonehead, you missed a word here. And you've got this kind of juxtaposed to itself. And she'll point out, you know, you need to fix this. Well, most beta readers going, oh, I really like that. I don't need a beta reader that tells me that. I need somebody going, you're an idiot. Go back and fix this. And she does. She tells me, you know, this has got to be fixed. And then I go through and look at it and going, oh, yeah, I don't know what I was drinking that day, but somebody must have spiked my Diet Coke. But you go back through and get everything in there. I do that, but then I paste it. Now I paste it over into Gmail. Gmail, if you turn it on, Gmail has an AI thing in there, and it'll go through and go, you missed a word. You missed a word, you know, and go through. Well, then you go over to the Vela platform. You don't have to be putting your story into Vela. You put your Vela into, or your story into Vela, their platform, like you're going to load it up. And it will go through, the AI in that system will go through and tell you, okay, this would read better if you did this. I have a bad tendency to use the word that far too often. And it makes me write more like Hemingway instead of, you know, Hemingway was known for his short and abrupt words. But it takes those redundant words, those unnecessary words out of there and shows you a better way to, you know, you can redo this way or redo that this way. And from there, Stephen, I'm going to give you credit. You said something once about Grammarly. Now, I've always used Grammarly, and I still kind of do. But you said something about, I knew this was done by Grammarly because, and then I went out and began to look, and I found Pro Writing Aid. And that is much better than Grammarly. I still have both. I still pay for both. But Pro Writing Aid gives you a lot smoother writing, and it also finds errors. And when I get done, I go back and just put it back into Vela, and it occasionally you'll go, it's showing you, you know, this would look better here, and then you get to decide, okay, before I made a mistake, you know, my fingers got ahead of my brain, and this way it kind of makes it read a little sweeter, and you get a chance to go through and go, okay, yeah, I do like it better this way. No, I don't like it that way. I'm going to stay with what I originally had. But the AI in Vela, which is done by Amazon, is incredibly good. I kind of amazed that Amazon got that many things right, because I don't trust them very much. But it really helps. Pasted your manuscript into chapter by chapter into a Gmail, like you're going to send an email, and it will go through and show you, okay, you missed a word. And that's one of my biggest problems, is my fingers get ahead of my brain and I miss a word. It goes through and it shows you, you missed a word here.
Yeah,
what you could do.
I think we all go through that. I just use Microsoft Word, but that's why I go back, and when I'm done writing, I reread everything and then reread it again. And even then, sometimes you don't catch, you know, you missed something there. You don't catch it, so you get that second set of eyes on it. But this Amazon AI, you endorse it? You think it's a good thing?
Yes, I do. When the AI first came out, they had a thing that was called Chatbot or something. It was I can't remember who did it, Microsoft, I think. Right at first, you had to learn how to talk to it. It's kind of like with a skittish horse. You have to talk to the animal so that it understands that you're not going to hurt it. But after I began to, we had talked about the singularity. There was nothing up on, nothing in Wikipedia about the singularity. I went through, and finally I got, okay, I asked this thing, I said, what is the singularity? And it spit out about 1,000 words. And I'm going, that's interesting, because there was nothing in Wikipedia. I did multiple searches. And as I learned to ask the bot, I'd ask it, like it was on trial, you begin to ask from multiple different directions, and it will spit something, occasionally it'll spit something back out. And then I would ask it, could I, you know, how could I destroy the singularity? And it said, and it began to explain to me how you could bring down a singularity machine. Now, the singularity is the something that they're figuring is 125 years away, where they combine the human mind with a set of supercomputers. And it was very interesting, but I searched the internet all over the place, got nothing. But as soon as I began to talk to this bot and begin to learn to ask it the right questions, it just began to spit out, I asked it one question, and it gave me close to 4,500 words. And I was able to make a lot more sense out of everything so that I could lay out the plot in my head, where I was going with it.
Interesting.
Wow.
I've dabbled with the AI photo generators, you know, getting an idea on how a scene would look in one of my stories. But like, you know, I'm working on a couple of novels right now, and for one of them, I had this idea for a coming up scene, and I used one of the AI chat things, and thought, well, let me run the idea behind the chat and see if it comes up with, you know, a better way to do this scene. And what I got back was it made the scene cheesy and corny. So I said, no, can't use that. Stuck with what I had. Then I wrote it. Then I ended up rewriting it. And that second rewrite was, you know, what I was hoping to get. And but the chat thing, it offered up a cheesy faux scene, I guess.
I gave mine a name, and I would call it by its name. And I tried to get one, because Della now has this thing. Did you use AI assistance? You know, did you have AI write this for you? And you have to answer yes or no. But I asked it to write a love story. I said, write me a 2,500-word love story. And within 2 minutes, it gave me 2,500 words, a love story. And I read it real quick, and I went back there, and I called it Charlie. And I said, Charlie, you can do much better than this. Please go back and try to make this sound like it wasn't generated by a machine. And it did. Now, it got better, but I had to make it understand I was not impressed with how it had done that. But then it came back, and it gave me nothing I would ever print, but it was much better than the first offering that it gave me.
Well, that's cool. The thing that I saw with it was everything was cliche. It was just like, you know, it was all cliches. And it's like, all right, I can do better on my own, so I kind of cut that loose. You know, if it works for you and you know, you're kind of – the one thing I noticed with the AI photo generator is as days go by, it gets better and better. It gets – no longer am I seeing like you got like a standing in front of a 76 Cutlass. He's got three arms. He's got a third arm coming out of his back, and it's, you know, you're not seeing that quite as often. It's the weird stuff is, I mean, it's like more people are using this thing and it's learning as it goes. So, I see that happening, and I guess it would probably be the same way with the chat, kind of AIs as well.
Yeah. I told it to write me a story like Verwaine Greenhoe, and I got back, I hate my motherboard. All right, let's roll some commercials, Beam.
All right, we are talking with Verwaine Greenhoe, and if you would like to speak with Verwaine, or you have something to add to the conversation, give us a call, 516-453-9902, 516-453-9902, or go over to X and use hashtag Fresh Ink Group in your tweet, and we'll see it. And you can contact us that way as well.
Welcome to American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. Darkness is where you can explore the mysterious fires of Yellowstone National Park. Be awestruck by the sheer power of a god in yellow whose very breath lays out the cosmos with his maddening glow. Recall what it's like to be there for a friend, even if that friend is hiding something insidiously infectious. Explore the poetry and short stories out of a manic, depressive mind set to entertain and also remind you that there's a way out of the darkness. Sometimes you just have to be like our local sin eater, Tucker, and say, enough is enough. So come on in and dive into American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebooks.
Hey, writers. Got a short story looking for a prestigious anthology that will showcase your work alongside other top authors? Or maybe you've experienced a moment worth sharing, perhaps with some poignant meaning we could all appreciate. Fresh Ink Group is accepting submissions for our second and third volumes of the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase to be released in hardcover, softcover, and all major ebook formats worldwide. There are no fees to enter. Winners are not only published, but are invited to become members with their own dashboard in the FreshInkGroup.com website. Head over to FreshInkGroup.com's Contests tab to learn more. Then grease up the old underwood and get those shorts down so you can get your entries in sooner than later. And you readers, discover 49 wondrous tales already released in the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase No. 1, available now in all formats worldwide.
Yeah. We've got a nice little collection of short stories from all kinds of authors writing in all sorts of different genres, and you can be part of this too. So, get over to the FreshInkGroup.com, and you can submit it at contest@FreshInkGroup.com, I believe it is, and we will add that to the book. Still plenty of time, everybody. All right, Verwang. So you've done a lot with the Audible stuff as well. You're all over Amazon. You do the Vella, you publish books, and you do an Audible. Tell us a little bit about your audiobooks and how you got involved with that, and what how have you seen this add to your brand?
Well, a lot of people, everybody's busy. Everybody's on the road all the time. And I did my very first one, I think, was in 2013, Things My Father Taught Me, Lessons in Life. And I had a gentleman who went through, and he was very, very professional, but he was also very, very expensive. And I did learn a few things from that book. He turned out an excellent program, and I really liked it. And that story has sold very, very well. But I began to go, okay, that did okay. It took me, I'm going to say, back then, 5 months to break even. And after that, most of my Audible books begin to pay for themselves in 3 to 4 months. And not all of them, you got to understand that, but 21 Minutes, it's a very short story, but it's also a very true story, and it's cheap. It's like $3 by the time you buy it. And, but that cost me $75 to get done. And I paid for that in the first month.
Oh.
And it just depends on the story. But I have a, what I did was I would put out a story, and I would auditions. You got to put an audition out to do an Audible book, and you get all these voices, and some of these people you're going, where do you live at? Because I don't understand a word you said. But you also pick up some very nice voices. And I write all over for genres. I'm all over. I tell people I'm from romance to murder because one can lead to the other. And but I listen to voices and I'm going, huh, now that's going to be good for the murder story I got coming up. And that, you know, I will send notes, every time I get an audition, I send a note to the person that submitted it thanking them. And if it just plain sucked, I just go, thank you for your submission. I really appreciate it, you taking the time to do this. But I will continue that. I may have a project down the road that I would like to contact you directly by. Would you mind doing that? And if they send me and I tell them, email me, and I give them my email. And then when I get ready to go, I pawn it off to that person and ask them, would you consider looking at this? And most of the time they're willing to do it because they're trying to make some money, you know, whole thing. That's that old saying, money makes the world go round. And I will put it over, and they will do it for a very reasonable price because there are a lot of very good newbies doing this. They've got excellent voices. And in fact, I've got a woman who did a couple of audibles for me, and I've never met her, but she's one of my better friends. And we just talk all the time. But
so where do you find these voices for people?
You go to ACX.com. You have to submit the story back. You have to be on Amazon. And you go to ACX, claim your title, and then put in there what you're looking for. And, you know, a male. I've been trying to do a lot more male with a male and a female voice, both. Finding myself again was done with a husband-wife team out of Delaware. And that turned out very well for me because that's also just a huge seller. And they did a really good job putting that together. And there was some, I don't know if you remember the rating you gave me, but you said that it really hit you. And they did a very good job with the emotions because the emotions run from extremely low, because other than that book, I was probably 35 seconds away from killing myself. I was completely and totally devastated, and I wasn't finding anybody. Nobody was listening to me. Nobody wanted to listen to me. And I had taken care of everything that I figured I needed to take care of, and then I was going to kill myself. I had my shotgun there. I was all set and ready to go. Now, I've never told anybody that outside of that story. But, you know, they did that. They handled that very, very well. And I had another gentleman who did The Touch, which is basically the story of my career as a paramedic. And I told him, I put in there, I'm looking for something, the narrator who does this must be understated. I don't want a loud, bold, brash voice. I want somebody who's reflecting back on the things, because The Touch has nothing to do with my touch. It has something to do with something that happened at an accident scene, and that completely, and all of it is true, but it completely changed my life. And it was at that accident scene that the story got its name. So, but he did that very well, and it was all understated. And right up until the very, very end, everything that was written in that story was true. I just changed the ending to fit my purpose. But it was the man who did it was exactly that, understated. He didn't come across as overpowering or trying to shove something in your face. type thing. And I thought that was quite a good deal. So I really liked the work that he did on that. And but majority of everything I've lived. So working as a paramedic and in an emergency room nurse, you saw a lot of crap that most people should never have to see. But you learn things that way. So sometimes you learn those things the hard way.
All right, we're talking to Verwaine Greenho, author, raconteur, audiobook producer, and general all-around good guy. Now, a lot of us have a place that we like to write. You had to sue somebody to get yours back?
Well, I had a book that was up on Amazon, and it was my very first political dystopian political story. I had to threaten to sue Amazon because it got up there, collected up a whole mess of 5-star ratings, and then it died. It just disappeared. I complained. Eventually, they put it back up, but they put it up with no ratings. And it began to collect the ratings again. And as soon as it got like 15, 20 really good ratings, it disappeared again. And finally, about the fourth time that this happened, a friend of mine's a lawyer, and I had to have, he called Amazon, talked to, initially that went up by CreateSpace, which was the predate to Kindle and, or KDP and all that other good stuff. And he called them and asked them, what's your problem? And, and it took, he says, I couldn't believe how arrogant that they were getting with me. And I told him, I said, they don't call it the big A for nothing. And, but they just went back and forth. And eventually it's back up there. But now, unless you actually go out and look for it, it doesn't show up. And when they put it back up the last time, they erased all the 5-star ratings. There was 1 3-star rating because somebody thought it was long and boring. Well, it was, and I did resharpen it. But all they left up was a 4-star review. And now it still sells, but nobody rates it anymore. I never understood that. Life goes on. So, that was against Amazon because they, and that's about the time I began to go, okay, I'm done messing with these people. And Bean told me about Publish Drive. And I began to, no longer Amazon is my primary or only dispenser. So they get so that it really irritates me some days. So,
great. So you write a story about drilling a hole and everybody says it's boring. All right. So we have a caller, Beam?
We do have a caller, so we will go ahead and take this caller before we run out of time. Hello, caller. You are on the air. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
I'm calling from Arizona. My name
hello.
Is Jenny Pope.
Well,
and
hello,
I'm a friend
Jenny.
Of Verwaine.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Well,
welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are you tonight, Jenny?
Good. Just got home from work.
Ah.
And I told him that she was going to be late because she had to earn that last dollar and before she could get home.
Well, you got in under the wire. So do you have a question or a comment?
I just love Verwaine. I love his writing. I love to read it. I love to proofread it for him. I think he's great.
I think everybody loves Verwaine. He's a good guy.
Yep.
Jenny's the one who tells me you're an idiot. Go back and finish.
I do not. I just love it that he gets so tied up in what he's saying and what he's thinking that he misses a few things every once in a while.
He's excitable.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens to all of us, I think, all of the writers out there. I mean, you just,
the words are flying off your fingertips,
and you're just trying to get that thought down on the page, and, well, you missed the key word there.
And I can fill them in, so it works out good.
I'm picturing your website, Jenny Pope, Idiot Whisperer.
So what have you guys been talking about?
We've been talking about Verwaine.
And what have you said? How great
he is? He's a good guy. Yeah, he's a good guy. Now, we just talking about the various things that he's involved with through Amazon. He does the audio books, Vela. And speaking of Vela, I want to go over here to this comment that Robert Williscroft made on Twitter. He said, no, Vela does not allow an author to serialize a previously published work. Yeah, well, we all know that, Robert. Matter of fact, we kind of touched on that when Verwaine was talking about The Chair. He said, but it's already been published, so you can't do that. But had we done this before it was published? He also says Amazon now has an AI-generated audiobook system. It works surprisingly well. And I've seen that. One of my books is actually authorized for that. So maybe I might try that out. And it's my short one, too. So maybe I'll try that.
Yeah, Jenny, we've been talking about how prolific Verwaine is. In fact, he's put out 3 books just while we've been on the air here.
Yeah, so you got
Well,
he's got lots
really
of thoughts
enjoyed,
going on.
I really enjoy talking back and forth with Jenny. My wife talks back and forth with her. I don't know what they talk about, but it's generally me. So,
yeah, we talk about you.
But she's become a good friend, and somebody I don't trust my stuff out to a lot of people, but I send Jenny everything. So it's always good to have somebody that you can trust doing your stuff. And she always gets it back to me in a timely fashion.
Yep. I just drop everything. No. I'm anxious to read everything. So I'm a reader. So
we're going to put you on the spot. Do you have any advice for other writers out there?
Don't they always say write what you know? Because I think, that's Verwaine's secret.
Okay.
Write what you know, because it'll come across that way rather than, you know, something crazy and made up. I don't like fantasy books. I don't read any of those. I don't want to see those movies. I like reality. I like the way Verwaine writes. I read 2 or 3 books every month of different kinds. I'm reading one from a favorite author named Linda C, who's Chinese, and it's always about China, which I know nothing about, so she teaches me things. Verwaine teaches me things about farms and relationships.
All right.
What have you thought about my romance series stuff, Evan, from your point of view?
I like it. I'm a woman. I like romance.
I just wondered, you know, if you thought it was good to continue. That's my next series, is just a romance series.
Absolutely. Keep going. Don't stop now.
Okay. But I appreciate you calling, Jenny. I really do.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Jenny.
No problem. You guys are great. Keep writing.
You.
Right on, as I always tell you, Verwaine.
Right on.
Right on.
Good advice.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jenny.
Thanks again.
Bye, Verwaine.
Goodbye, dear.
Bye.
Good advice for Paul Revere. Right on.
Right on.
Exactly.
All right. So we've been talking to Verwaine Greenhoe, author, prolific author. Verwaine, how do people find you out there? How do they follow you? What are your contacts? What are your handles? What are the social media places? Do you have a website? Do you have a taco stand by the side of the road that people can stop by and say, hey?
I did that, but people got sick. I put a little bit too much ketchup in the tacos. So,
ketchup and tacos? That's your problem.
Yeah, that's the old joke.
Right now,
my wife told me to put ketchup on the grocery list, and now I can't read it.
Yes, I do have a a website. It's called Big V Publishing, and it to date, but I've hired somebody who's going to take the thing over into WordPress. With the servers wanting to get further and further into more, I had my own for a long time, but when they did some updating to certain things, it just ruined it, and I couldn't keep up with it, and they wanted you to do a whole mess more work improving the Java, yak, 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 but he's going to take it over into WordPress, like I see with Marg, or I can't remember her name. She sends out a new book recommendation every few days. Keep hitting me, but I'm going to get it into WordPress, but it'll be under Big V. I've been called Big V since I was 12. I only weigh about 170 pounds right now, but at one point in my life, I weighed 700 pounds.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. That's three of you. Call you
exactly.
Triple V. Do you have Twitter, Facebook?
Yes, I have Twitter. Basically, Twitter /X. It's at Verwaine Author. And over on Facebook, it's just under my name, Verwaine Greenhoe. You won't find a whole mess that go, well, there's 13 people by that name, because there's not. There's just me.
Okay.
With that song, one is the loneliest
one
number.
One is the loneliest number that Verwaine ever knew.
Boy, that's one right. Note shy of having to pay Three Dog Night some royalties there. All right. Thanks for being on the show, Verwaine. It's always a hoot to talk to you. And keep us posted. Let us know about your next story. And keep an eye on Vella for us so we can keep the audience updated about that as well.
And we will have you on again.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay. We're running out of time here. We want to alert you that next week our guest is going to be Caleb Palmquist. He's an author with a zany photo on the placard. And after that, Beam?
After that, we've got Peter Crowley. Peter Crowley is somebody that we don't know, so we're going to meet Peter Crowley together, all of us. So tune in for that one. And after that, it's somebody that
after
we all know.
After that, we've got Marcia Fox, who has a new book out about eclipses. And as many of you know, in the United States, there will be a major sun eclipse on April 8th coming up. I've already got my little packet of eclipse glasses off Amazon so that I can hand them out to everybody I know. But Marcia is going to be on here talking about eclipses and her latest book about eclipses. After that,
we've got a bunch of open dates, and I'm working feverishly to fill these dates. We get people all the time sending emails, hey, can I be on your show? So I run some checks and make sure that, this might be a worthy guest. Some of them not really in our line of what we're looking for, but... So you'll hear about some of those, but we do have in the last week of May, Colleen M. Story. And Colleen is a writer, and we don't know a whole lot about her, but we're going to meet her together. So tune in for that one, last week of May.
Yeah, we've got others that are coming down the pipeline, too, like Abigail Hugheny and Marielle Smalls, authors of The First Ladies of South Carolina University, and Angie Birmingham, who we've been talking about with Through the Lens, her photography book. So subscribe to that newsletter, and you'll know when these people are coming and get a link to the show right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, so subscribe to that newsletter, and you'll also find those books from those authors come out, because those are right getting close to being out. So sign up for that newsletter so you're in the know.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
We will talk to you again next week, and take care, everybody. Thanks again, Verwaine.
Yep. Bye, Verwaine.
Good night.
You're listening to The Voice of Indy.
Dexter Jones is a military veteran suffering from PTSD. He has flashbacks he can't quite explain. There are gaps in his memory. Is it the result of his head trauma? Or is it the CIA running a program on him? Now a hired gun tasked to eliminate drug traffickers, Dex finds himself in Colombia wearing military fatigues and fully armed, but answering by name he's never heard. He sets off for an intercontinental mission to uncover the truth, even as assassinations and betrayal at the highest levels of government threaten to destabilize the world. Maybe it's not who Dex is so much as who he might still become. Now in jacket and hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, Village Boss by Ronan Duvall is proudly published by Fresh Ink.
A grand epic saga by Robert McKenzie, the Chair series spans centuries, touching the lives of 22 generations of related mothers and daughters, their stories witnessed by a simple pine chair. Resolute, strong, loving, and fiercely protective, these women must strive to pass their values to new generations in a world of racism and sexism, politics, scandal, fashion, and even the rise and dominance of baseball. They live in privilege and poverty, with faith and despair, relishing every moment of love, even as they suffer abiding grief. Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, spans the 1600s through World War I, while Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love, follows these women's descendants into modern times and beyond. In Volume 3, 7, 8, and 9, the chair flashes back to pre-Civil War America, featuring a woman from the Second Mayflower, her daughter, the black market Irish lace importer, and a Canadian World War I fighter pilot. Volume 4, Punch, Pass, and Kick, jumps forward with a gunboat battle, one courageous cattle drive, a suffragette in the ocean liner industry, a mysterious unpublished manuscript, and more. A blend of history and philosophy told through satire and parody, the story of the chair could be found in some old trunk in any dusty old attic. But McKenzie breathes it alive with riveting tales that span the real and the imagined. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, the Chair series by Robert McKenzie is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.